At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Item one, mark your calendars. Item two, the iron business is doing pretty well. And item three, those headphones, they are not just for listening anymore. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Monday, the 17th of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We will begin today with a diary entry of sorts, a note for you to make in your calendar, because this week has the whiff of big economic news about it. The Federal Reserve, as you might have heard elsewhere, meets on interest rates tomorrow and Wednesday. And while one presupposes what Chair Jay Powell and the gang are going to do on rates at one's own peril, there are murmurings among those who know that even if they don't actually cut interest rates at this coming meeting, the Fed is going to be giving some pretty broad hints about its intentions in the statement they issue after every gathering. We will do a dramatic reading or something on the program Wednesday if they do give any of those big clues. We learned today that FedEx is going to be expanding its footprint in rural America in a big way. The shipping giant is teaming up with Dollar General to offer package services at more than 8,000 different locations around the country by the end of next year. It's indicator number 3 zillion of how intense the competition is getting for your online dollar. Marketplace's Amy Scott has that one.
Cindy Chisholm lives in rural Mississippi, where the nearest FedEx ship center is in Meridian.
And that's over 30 miles from us.
Driving to the local Dollar General would be a lot easier. It's only 12 miles away. Chisholm says she prefers getting deliveries at home, but thinks many of her neighbors would rather pick up packages in town.
A lot of them don't like opening their doors for people, and a lot of them work and are not at home all the time.
For FedEx, shipping to retail stores will save miles on trucks and hours of labor, says John Rand, a consultant with Life at Retail.
Having easier and less expensive ways to get things to be shipped through their system makes a lot of sense.
For its part, Dollar General is trying to break into online retail. It's about to let customers order online and pick up at the store. Analyst Camilla Januszewski with CFRA Research says down the road,
they can use FedEx's distribution network to deliver their own products.
Dee Davis is president of the Center for Rural Strategies. He lives in Whitesburg, Kentucky, where a sign heading into town says
1,532 friendly people and two grouches.
He says more people coming in to do their online business could help Dollar General's brick and mortar sales.
And at the same time, they're there where they can make impulse buys.
And if you're wondering who those grouches are, it's a rotating position. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
I was totally wondering, actually. There is art auction news today. Sotheby's is going private. The French-Israeli telecommunications mogul Patrick Drahi is going to spend $3.7 billion all in to buy Sotheby's. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more now on what's in the deal for Drahi and for the company.
Drahi is an art collector. He made his money starting the European telecommunications company Altice in 2001 and has made a habit of aggressively acquiring companies and cutting costs. But he said in a statement, that's not the play here. He said, quote, I'm making this investment for my family, unquote. Evan Beard at Citi Private Bank says the acquisition makes sense given Drahi's other business.
Having this owned in a basket of brands, you may find other synergies, other ways that an elegant brand like this can enhance some of your media properties.
Like brand development, even financial services. Sotheby's has been the only publicly traded major auction house. It reported a loss of more than $7 million for the first quarter of this year. Its chief rival, Christie's, has been a private company for decades, so it doesn't have to disclose anything about its finances. Michael Plummer is a principal at ArtVest Partners and has worked for both Christie's and Sotheby's.
Christie's always had an advantage over Sotheby's in the sense that they could keep their plans and their strategies and their activities more private or completely private.
Plummer says he's not convinced Sotheby's going private will make the art world any less transparent than it already is.
It will give us less data about art auction businesses, but only half of the transactions in the art market take place at auction.
He says the other half takes place with art dealers, and there's no transparency there whatsoever. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
On Wall Street to start this week, up a little bit all the way around. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Now that Uber's gone public, WeWork, technically its parent company, the We Company, is the most valuable startup in this economy, $47 billion or so for basically renting out office space, right? Yes, that does oversimplify a tad. Reeves Wideman had a much more broad profile of the company and its co-founder in New York Magazine the other day. Reeves, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
For those who aren't familiar, just because there may be some out there, what exactly is WeWork? I guess technically the We Company, right?
Yeah, they've rebranded this year and expanded their brief a little bit. But basically, WeWork is a 9-year-old company. It was originally a co-working company. The business is essentially rent a space, slice it up into smaller spaces, and rent those out with cool design, free coffee, free beer, and the idea that you're going to interact with other companies. The company has blown up and grown exponentially around the world. They no longer consider themselves really a co-working company. They are now in sort of a broader category of flexible office space.
Well, so that actually gets to sort of the bigger picture and the vision of the founder of this company, who the only phrase I can come up with to describe him, he's just an interesting dude, man.
Interesting dude is right. Adam Neumann co-founded the company along with Miguel McKelvey. And Adam Neumann has really been the person who has pushed this vision for WeWork of being a physical social network. They were going to open spaces around the world, and by being a WeWork member, they don't have tenants, they have members, you suddenly have access to this community. And, you know, potentially all kinds of advantages emerge, and in the We Company's thesis, a lot of different ways to potentially make money.
Okay, so look, this is going to be the trickiest question I'm going to ask you. And obviously, smarter people than you and I have figured this out because they have plowed billions of dollars into this company. But what's the there other than renting out space?
Well, it's interesting. The building I'm talking to you from in Midtown Manhattan, in the ground floor, there's a Regus. And Regus was kind of the WeWork of the dot-com era.
Yeah, that's the first floor of our building in New York, right? The Marketplace Bureau.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've seen it. Right, exactly.
And you know, what they basically provided to the dot-com boom in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s was flexible office space. When the economy tanked, Regus went down with it. It has since recovered and is now a public company worth roughly $3 billion. It is nicely profitable. And it is significantly larger, has more spaces, many more members than WeWork does.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But is, you know, valued at nothing close to what WeWork has gotten.
Has to be pointed out here that this company loses something like $1.5 billion a year.
More than that. Last year they lost roughly $1.9 billion. And many people can't see a way in which WeWork could go from losing $1.9 billion to making billions of dollars, I think there's a path towards, you know, getting somewhere that's more nicely profitable. But it continues to lose money, and that obviously is going to be the question. As the company has stated, they're moving towards an IPO sometime in the near future. Mm-hmm.
The culture inside WeWork has been called challenging. It has been called actually inappropriate and you know, a boys' club and not necessarily a place everybody wants to work.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the kind of things I heard from employees were a lot of complaints you hear about a lot of fast-growing startups. There's not attention to HR. You know, problems emerge when you have to hire, as they are currently, 100 people a week.
Wow.
Interestingly, I mean, Adam Neumann has been an entrepreneur his whole life. He's never been an employee of a company. And so a lot of employees, you know, would come in kind of inspired by his mission. But ultimately, you know, they're there for a job. You want benefits. You want good hours. You want to work on something meaningful. But, you know, that can kind of rub people the wrong way.
Right. There's a great line in your piece, which I'm scrolling now madly to see if I can find it. But you fit the founder of WeWork, Neumann, in between Steve Jobs and him becoming, you know, the business deity, and Elon Musk at the other end. You fit him in there in the hagiography of entrepreneurial founders.
Well, I think there's a certain craziness that we've come to expect and in some ways at least admire in our sort of big time entrepreneurs. And Adam Neumann very much sees his company, and you know, I think it's a genuine belief. It's one that obviously confuses people because they kind of wonder what about flexible office spaces is going to change the world, but sees this as a way to do something bigger than just, you know, providing people a nice place to work.
Reeves Wideman, writing in New York Magazine about WeWork and its founder. Reeves, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
A detour now from the European Union stories that have been dominating of late. Will or won't? And if they will, when will the United Kingdom leave the EU? There's a crisis of sorts brewing on Europe's southern flank between Rome and the European Commission over the Italian budget. The Commission has just taken the first step toward fining Italy for breaking EU budget rules. But the current Italian government, no fan of the European Union, it must be said, has a new weapon at hand, a proposed financial instrument of sorts called the mini-bot. And as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now from the European desk, the opportunities for economic peril are high.
The mini-bot would be aimed at allowing the government to pay its way without using euros, says Lorenzo Codogno, a former chief economist with the Italian Treasury.
The government would use it to pay suppliers and possibly even use it to pay civil servants' wages. And on top of that, the government would allow people and companies to pay taxes with this.
The plan has been knocking around for some time, but it resurfaced last month when the Italian Parliament agreed that the government should consider creating mini-bots. And why?
One of the main objectives of these proposals are really to bypass the fiscal rules.
The fiscal rules imposed by the Eurozone. The idea is that the mini-bots would allow the government to expand spending without breaching those Eurozone budget restrictions. Codogno and other critics think the idea is crazy.
I think in the end, however, it's really just a negotiating tactic.
Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank.
This is a threat. They want a little bit more flexibility from Brussels, and they'll probably get it by this kind of threat.
But he concedes the mini-bot could be more than just a lever in the budget negotiations. It could conceivably presage Italy's departure from the Eurozone.
It could be a parallel currency which would enable them to get out of the euro.
But there's something standing in the way of the mini-bot becoming a parallel currency. It's structured as a tax credit, so the government would have to permit recipients to use it to pay for things other than taxes. And that's possible, says Agnese Ortolani of the Economist Intelligence Unit.
They could use it to settle any, for instance, energy bills or buy train tickets or other goods or services that are supplied by public companies.
The mini-bot could become a kind of lira in waiting, an Italian currency that could be swiftly turned into legal tender if the country ditches the euro. Last month's parliamentary vote on the mini-bot was non-binding. If that changes, says Ortolani, there could be a big market reaction.
to put this into a piece of legislation, then it would be widely perceived by the markets as the very first step for Italy to exit the eurozone.
At the thought of the eurozone losing its third largest economy, the market reaction would be fierce. The euro would plummet, Italian bond yields would soar. Mini-bot sceptics like Lorenzo Codogno think it's unlikely to occur.
You don't think Italy leaving the euro is going to happen?
I don't think it will happen, but I think at this stage, with this government, I think it's unlikely, but it's not impossible.
The Italian Treasury tried to calm investor fears, insisting it is not planning a parallel currency, but anxiety is growing. A senior figure in the ruling Lega party hasn't helped. He posted online a mock-up of the mini-bot, and it looked exactly like a banknote. At the European Desk in London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up,
you can actually use them for many different purposes, and it really becomes a computer on your person.
No, it's not a smartphone, but you are going to need one of those, too. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up less than a tenth percent today, 22 points, 26,112 on the blue chips. The S&P 500 also up less than a tenth percent, 2 points, 2889. The NASDAQ rose 6-tenths percent, 48 points, 78 and 45. CNBC reports the satellite television provider Dish Network is in talks to get into the cellular phone business, that by picking up some assets from Sprint and T-Mobile as those two angle for a merger. Shares in Dish up almost 4% today. Sprint up 1.2%. T-Mobile nudged up about 0.5%. The news that Sotheby's is going into private hands, Andy Euler was telling us about, gave shares in the auction house a big old boost. They closed up 58% today. Bond prices were up too. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note dipped to 2.08%. You're listening to Marketplace. Marketplace turned 30 this year, and to celebrate, we are going back to the 1980s. Check out our new thank you gifts that you can choose from when you become a Marketplace investor. Your donation, big or small, will help us keep bringing you news and information you trust for years to come. So please donate today at marketplace.org. Hey, Marketplace listeners, it's Kai. We've got a new podcast out I think you're going to want to subscribe to. It's called This Is Uncomfortable. It's a weekly show about life and how money messes with it. It's hosted by Rima Kreis. She tells funny and honest stories about how money affects relationships and shapes identities and often defines what it means to be an adult. Please subscribe to our new show. It's called This Is Uncomfortable, and you can do that wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We went down to Columbus, Georgia a year or so ago for a bunch of stories on what manufacturing in America looks like today. And one of the people we wound up talking to was George Boyd Jr., who, with his brother and his family, are fifth-generation owners of Golden's Foundry and Machine Company, established 1882. Cast iron is what they do, heavy-duty parts for mining and oil and gas and road and bridge construction. And just because it's always better to get firsthand information on how this economy is doing, we got George Boyd back on the phone the other day.
George Boyd.
Mr. Boyd, Kai Rizdal in Los Angeles, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Kai. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. You got a couple of minutes?
Yeah, sure.
So we were there a year ago, down in Columbus. How's it been since?
It's been very busy. It's been very busy.
You sound tired. It's been so busy.
I think we're all probably feeling it a little bit. Actually, we're finally getting to a place where we can catch our breath a bit. Yeah, but from about the time you left last year, things just really kept booming forward, and so we had our busiest sales year ever, and I think worked more overtime and experienced maybe more challenges than we've had recently.
Talk me through the challenges then. I imagine, probably workforce is one of them, right?
Yeah, so workforce is certainly a big challenge. And as you're trying to find people to get in, until you find the crews that you need or the number of heads that you need, you wind up stretching your current shift arrangements. And so we wound up with guys working long shifts and adding days of the week. And unfortunately, a lot of last year was more 6 days than 5 days, and more than a few instances, 7 days.
Hmm.
And that's a hard way to run.
Did you find any of the trade brouhaha, as it were? Has that impacted you at all?
No, I wouldn't say that we certainly haven't seen any slowdown as a result of it. I mean, if anything, we've seen, you know, business get much stronger. It's been interesting as our industry ran out of capacity during this last year, and it was generally that was kind of where we were.
That's actually, hang on a minute, because that's quite something, right? The running out of capacity is not a thing you hear about American manufacturing much anymore.
That's right. No, I think it caught everybody. I think the suddenness of the growth and the impact that it had on the supply base caught everybody by surprise. In terms of the impact from trade, too, I mean, we've got, as the continued issues go on, particularly with China, customers that are more inclined now to think that the climate may be changing on trade as opposed to just weather blowing through.
Yeah.
So, you know, because if it's going to be just a short little storm, they'll keep their supply chain stretched. But if they realize this is kind of the new normal, they'll start to reshore stuff. And so we're certainly seeing that.
Are you reshoring?
Yeah.
Huh. NAFTA and USMCA, is that playing in your plans at all? I mean, let's get away from the China stuff, but, you know, the North American trade. Talk to me about that.
A lot of the product that we produce winds up going to assembly plants in Mexico,
right,
and then brought back into the United States for sale. So, you know, it's important for our customers for them to have a good supply chain that allows that to happen without much interference. We're certainly happy to see some of the improved American content requirements that were part of the new USMCA. So I imagine the Congress will get it put through so that we can get that back on track.
Tired as you are you hopeful and confident?
Yeah, the remainder of this year looks really good. And like I said, it's been nice as we've turned into the new year. We've been able to get some stuff done to get ourselves in a better position to take advantage of this increased volume of business. Mm-hmm. So we're tired, but we aren't weary, right? We've got a good bit of the race left to run. So we see continued strength through this year and into the beginning of next year.
George Boyd Jr., he and his family run a foundry down in Columbus, Georgia. It's called Golden's Foundry and Machine Company. Mr. Boyd, thanks for your time, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you, man.
chances are pretty good that at some point today you either already have or you will wear headphones of one kind or another. Earbuds, actual headphones, whatever, on public transit, in the office, maybe out for a run or walking the dog or something. Headphones are everywhere, and tech companies have noticed. They're building new AI into them, artificial intelligence, to feed us directions and notifications, even advertisements in a whole new way. As Marketplace's Jack Stewart reports, it's called audio augmented reality.
40 years ago, music became portable and personal. The Sony Walkman went on sale in the US in December 1979.
Put on a Walkman and see the world in a whole new light. Sony Walkman.
That ad was from 1981. By then, portable cassette players and orange foam headphones became so popular, the New York Times ran a story warning some see the growing headphone movement as socially alienating. Well, society hasn't imploded, but we are wearing headphones more. Michael Knapp is from audio specialists Harman.
Originally, headphones were really a means to listen to music.
As recently as 2014, Apple turned up the bass when it bought Beats Electronics for $3 billion. The driver for headphone sales was high-end audio. And then in 2016, Apple released its wireless earbuds, and suddenly headphones were all about accessing Siri and answering calls.
What we're finding is that you can actually use them for many different purposes, and it really becomes a computer on your person.
I've spent the last week sporting the latest idea, a $200 pair of large black plastic sunglasses. They're made by Bose, the company probably best known for its noise-cancelling headphones. And there are tiny speakers in the arms that pump music into only my ears. It gets pretty loud when I put them on, but it's still pretty much imperceptible to anybody near me. And they have a microphone, so I can access the voice assistant on my phone.
Read me my new messages.
Sorry, did you want to hear the message?
Yes.
It says, is it time for lunch yet?
Okay, so mixed results on the usefulness there, but the promise, if the interaction gets smoother, is huge.
We're in a bit of a transitional phase, I think, between where these devices could potentially go and where they're at right now.
Ariel Pardes covers personal technology at Wired.
The pitch that tech companies are trying to make is that not having to pull out your phone to access your voice assistant is more useful.
These companies say the future of headphones is not a way to isolate yourself from the world, but a new way to connect with it. Bill Buxton works on audio augmented reality at Microsoft Research. He uses technology to place sounds in your environment in an immersive way. They can appear to come from a particular direction, not just left or right, but also in front or behind you, all through your headphones.
If I was trying to get you to a location and you didn't know where it was and you're walking around the streets of New York City, and I said, okay, I'm going to put a church bell at that location. So just walk towards the church bell. Then all of a sudden you can choose your own route along, you know, the streets and avenues, but you know you're going in the correct direction.
The Bose glasses I'm wearing are a step in the direction of this audio augmented reality. Paired with a phone, they'll give you a virtual golf caddy to guide you around a course, for example. But I can imagine a future where glasses with speakers and a camera and facial recognition would help me with my biggest social problem. I'm terrible with names.
His name is Michael. You just met him 10 minutes ago. You forgot already?
Or maybe some sassy AI fashion advice?
Those shoes do not go with this outfit.
I'm not the only one imagining potential use cases for headphones that are never taken off. Here's Ariel Pardes of Wired again.
I think we can certainly imagine a version of the future where, in order to have maybe a free audio AR subscription, you have sort of podcast-style advertisements piped into your ear every hour.
It seems with every new technological platform comes new opportunities for advertising. But if you do want to go old school, there are refurbished Walkmans available online. Just pop in your favorite mixtape and turn up the volume. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, I mentioned on Friday that we are just about tied right now for the longest expansion in economic history in this country. At the end of the month, it'll be 10 years exactly since the end of the recession. Today, a less upbeat economic record. Yesterday made it 3,615 days since the federal minimum wage has been increased. July 24, 2009, if you're looking for the exact date. That is the longest the federal minimum wage has been stuck since it was first established back in 1938. All right, we're going. Dow Industrial's up less than a tenth of 1%. Today, S&P 500 also up less than a tenth percent. The NASDAQ, though, rose 0.6% today. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Daniel Shin. Our special projects desk is Tommy Andres and Eliza Mills. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.